Blog Talk Radio.
Pour yourself a cup of tea, put your feet up, and relax. Show host Randy Fine, narcissistic abuse expert, compassionate counselor for clients worldwide, and author of the groundbreaking new book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, invites you into her sanctuary, a place where your emotional, physical, and spiritual well-being are all that matters. Time to Heal is a fundraising single written and performed by Johnny Z for the Amy Winehouse Foundation. For more information, please go to johnnymusic.com, johnnymusic.com. And now, it's time to meet Randy, show host of the podcast enjoyed by fans around the globe, A Fine Time for Healing.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. Whew. I am so happy to be broadcasting from South Florida today. We are very lucky. I only got grazed by the storm. And now the weather is cooler, I should say, and the breezes are balmy. So thank you, Matthew, for saving us. But my prayers do go out to those who are in the line of fire and will be less fortunate. So we can all pray for those people and hope that they survive this without at least injury, because property can be replaced, even though that's devastating. But anyway, today we will be talking with Diane Emerson, the author of the book, Psychopaths in Our Lives, My Interviews. Diane operated an online discussion forum for 18 years to allow victims of psychopaths to connect, communicate, and share experiences. In her book, she interviews three psychopaths, allowing us to look straight into their minds and hearing exactly what they have to say about such things as feelings, morality, trust, control, and the lack of compassion they have for their victims. What they reveal is stunning and oftentimes quite unsettling. So let me bring Diane on and we can get started. Good morning, Diane. It's great to have you.
Good morning, Randy. Thank you very much for inviting me. Good morning to you, too.
You are so welcome. So, Diane, what got you interested in psychopaths?
Well, what got me interested was, you know, when the internet became available about, you know, 18, 19 years ago, I was, you know, internet was available at home and I'd been a longtime true crime reader. And so I just was curious and, you know, it was the first real adventure to be able to explore online. So I started, you know, looking up different topics that had kind of been on my mind, and being a true crime reader, I was curious, like, where are these psychopaths that aren't locked up? Clearly not all of them could be locked up. So I started this little forum where I was just basically storing information, and lo and behold, people word got around, kind of word of mouth at the time, and people started showing up and talking about their experiences. And the very first people were actually parents of suspected psychopathic children. So from there, I moved to a crime friends invited me to their forum, and then I moved to my own space about 14 years ago. And it was kind of one of those things. I didn't really have like this mad plan to come up with a discussion forum because there weren't any at the time. It just sort of happened. I mean, I was just basically collecting information and victims started showing up. So I've always, it's more been of a public service from my part, you know, keep the lights on, the doors open. Although conversations the last couple of years have dwindled down, but there's still a lot of good stories there. And what I found was the victims are in a very isolated position by the time they decide to leave. So the forum gave them a place to talk. So then when I set out to write about it, people were always like, well, why don't you write about the victims? And I started that. And then I thought, you know, I get contacted over the years by psychopaths themselves. And I had a very strict policy, clearly, that they weren't allowed at my forum because clearly it'd be unsettling for the members. So one day I had one of those moments and I thought, you know, I think I probably should interview these guys and really see if I can get something that will match up with what the victims have said, plus more that the victims have missed in what they've talked about. So that's actually how I did it. And it was creepsville, I must say, when I interviewed these guys.
Oh my gosh.
But I interviewed, I interviewed three, and I would only interview them in writing because they prey off of our emotions. So I didn't want them to have any access to what I was thinking along the way. So I would only interview them in writing, and which they became quite frustrated by that at times because I wasn't feeding them anything. And the reason I did three was because I wanted to have, you know, just revealing information from one of them to me wouldn't be very journalistic. It wouldn't show a real pattern. So, and they were in three different parts of the world. They didn't know each other. They had no contact. So I felt like I would probably get a lot closer to the truth that way because they would have no access to my emotions. I wasn't feeding them information. And then I would have three people to develop, you know, how do these theories all work amongst them?
There's, I wrote down something that I think sums them up in general, but we're going to get into more detail. But I don't remember who said it, but a normal person cannot predict and understand psychopaths because there is nothing to understand as they would see it. We are not playing the same game. The person you need me to be in order to trust, confide in, support, and promote is the person I will become. Being free of unpredictable emotional reactions and guilt, I am free to be whatever, whenever, and then change that when necessary. And, you know, what I find is, you know, because I deal with victims of narcissistic personality disorder, the thing that hangs people up, and I would imagine it's the same thing with victims of psychopaths because it's similar, there's a lot of similarities, is that we try to make sense out of it. And here it is coming out of his mouth saying, there's nothing to understand because we can't ever relate to it, right?
Yeah, they nailed it, yeah. Yeah. Their self-reflectiveness was the part that really threw me for a curveball because when I first started interviewing them, I wasn't sure if I'd walk away with anything worth writing about. And there were so many times along the way that I was like, whoa, wait a minute, how self-reflective they were. I mean, how they really come up with these answers and these plans and these plots. It was just, it's very, well, here's the deal. Not all narcissistic personality disorders are psychopaths, but all psychopaths have narcissistic personality disorder. And narcissism can be an acquired trait, whereas psychopathy is a gene. So
right.
I think buried in the narcissistic pile a lot of times can be psychopaths because we're a very polite society here. We want to be kind. You know, you watch these Dateline shows and the guy's, you know, done this horrible thing and they never come out and say, hey, the guy was a psychopath. They come out and say, yeah, he was really nice and blah, blah, blah. So I think that a lot of them get tucked into the narcissistic category because it's hard for people to make that leap. That's why victims have such a hard escape route because it sounds so extraordinary when you say, well, I think my ex-husband is a psychopath. And you're like, yeah, okay, talk to you later. So it's hard for people to translate what that really means in everyday life because we only see them as serial killers.
Exactly. And there are many of them walking among us.
Well, yeah, and the one sitting next to you, either in work or a personal relationship, is the one who's going to get you. I mean, stranger danger is really overplayed in the media. Now, clearly, I don't walk down dark alleys and dangerous parts of town at midnight, but my chances of getting in some brutal scene are very minimized. It's the person that you bring into your life that's going to brutalize you, maybe not physically, but mentally. They have to know you to get to you. That's what I'm saying.
That's right. I think Fred said.
And they have to, you know, they have to start off charming and sweet and everything, you know, like your dreamboat kind of person, because if they showed their fangs in the very beginning, I mean, you would run immediately. So, and the interesting thing is they have a whole process for who they look for, how they look for them, and, you know, how they maneuver them. And it's all about control.
Yes. Yes. Fred said, I thought this was perfect. My side of the conversation, so he's talking about when he's talking to other people, is founded on don't believe a word I say.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is so true. I mean, we cannot believe, and it's beyond our comprehension with normal minds that are not personality disordered in any way. We cannot fathom that.
Well, no, and really, the type they attract are kind and caring people, which clearly I advocate for being that way. But they do seek out that kind, and I think you followed that in the book. The reason they seek out that kind is because they're testing you all along the way to see what your tolerance level is. And kind and caring people tend to brush the red flags white. They just find it. And I was amazed because over the years, victims would say things like, well, you know, he told me he was dark and evil. And I'm like, well, what was your response? And they would laugh. And they even said the same thing themselves. Hey, I tell people who I am, but nobody believes me. So it's like, really, you know, I'm hearing it from both sides now. They do expose who they are, but really, are you listening is the question.
Right, because it's not in our... we can't fathom such things, that somebody could be that dark and evil. And we do believe we can change people, or some people do. Some people with very high self-esteem will just walk away. But anybody that's, and I guess even people with high self-esteem can get caught up in this, so I don't mean to say to isolate, you know, that group. But it's, sometimes we can see it. We don't want to see it. People that have codependency issues, probably that's what I should say more likely, want to believe that they can fix these people. And this is who they prey on. You know, he said, Fred said, one of the reasons people get hurt is because of this. If you have a conception of love so out there, so Disney sequel that reality should have intruded on it and replaced it with something remotely realistic by now, you will most likely attract the attention of someone you wish you hadn't. He says that. When we are idealistic, that's when they come in.
Well, but they also set you up to be that way, because remember, the charm gets poured on in the beginning. They're very acute listeners, so they are really mining data. But you'll walk away feeling like, you know, this guy really gets me. He's listening like nobody ever has. And really, they're just gathering data on you. So they will lead you along the way so that you will become putty. So even a very high self-esteem person is capable of becoming a victim, because people always dance back to the very first part of the relationship in their minds. They want to recapture that. So no matter how hard they try to recapture that, you've got somebody manipulating you along the way that's flipping your reality, and you really want to believe it because that first part was so great. I mean, it was wonderful. They were listening. They were kind. They were everything you ever thought that you ever wanted to meet, you know, whether it be male or female. They're equal opportunity abusers. I don't think they really have any kind of special looks or whatever. Women have said that, for example, that they'd be with a guy that wasn't even that attractive and not even their type, but the charisma kind of overrode all of those things because they're so charming.
I hear the same thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they could be, you know, and the thing is that, and they have ways of taking a rational conversation And they have, and you saw them in my book, that they have a whole series of things that they'll say. You know, you get in a confrontation the night before and those black beady eyes come out and you sense you're around evil. So the next day you want to have what you would consider a rational conversation. Well, there is no rational conversation because they will turn that around. And I'll guarantee you that at the end of the conversation, you will be the one apologizing. Because remember, they're always the victim. Everything is blamed on somebody else. So that's how you then start to play into the dynamics as the victim.
Very true. Very true. yeah, you talked about gaslighting, you know, and Steve gives so many examples. No, actually, Fred, I think, is the one that gives, you know, a lot of examples, but, you know, of gaslighting and things that he says that people would say to us, you know, like, have you been, like, do you ever listen, or you must be misremembering, you know, those
yeah.
kind of things. And then they get you convinced that you're the one who is at fault, like you said, and crazy.
Well, that's their end goal, because they want to destabilize you so they can control you. And I really recommend that people watch the movie Gaslight with the great Ingrid Bergman and Charles Boyer. I think it was 1944, 45. That's where the term originally originated from. And that was one thing that I never heard in all those years the victims really talk about. Because here's the deal. If it's done well, you don't know it's being done to you. It's so subtle. And it's that off-balancing everything from what I'm described, you know, banging on the wall while you're asleep to disrupt sleep patterns, moving your keys around, all the way to giving people medications, sneaking them into their food stuff to off-balance them. So it's all a matter of isolating, and that's what makes it so complex for the victims, because by the time, if they can wobble back to their feet again, by that point, everybody in their life has been distributed away from them. They have, you know, the psychopath is the center of their universe by that point. So family and friends have given up on them. So they're really in a very isolated position, which is where they want them. And that's how they'll keep repeating. You know, they'll keep coming back into the relationship, which, you know, for friends and family who want to support a person, that makes it pretty dicey, because I'd be very careful welcoming somebody back into my life that had been in the arms of a psychopath, because chances are it might take a few spins before they'll finally get out, unless they find some sort of specialized counseling.
Exactly. You know, I think, and, you know, going back to like what you said, where they'll tell us, they'll actually tell us that they have this dark part of their personality, but we don't want to believe that anyone that there isn't some goodness in everyone. We are taught to
yeah.
believe that everyone has redeeming qualities, and that confuses us. So when we see the truth, we don't want to look at it. I don't know if it's cognitive dissonance or what it is, but it doesn't make sense to us, so we just dismiss it.
Well, people dismiss it because they're also invested by that point. They're invested in the ideal of what this relationship is. They're invested in what this person says that they are. They're invested in how they made us feel during the honeymoon phase. And that's like with drug users. They're always chasing that first high, but they never get it again. And that's how a relationship is with a psychopath, is that the partners and, you know, victims tend to always be chasing the good times. And so whatever bad happens along the way, there's this very dismissive attitude a lot of it is survival, because we want to believe this stuff, like you said. So it makes it easier, and they have all the reasons why. Now, that's the most interesting people are the ones that I write about, because they'll probably never spend a day in prison, but they'll probably ruin more lives than the most prolific serial killer. So we have a fixation for the very evil side. If you look at the current shows on TV, I mean, the most popular shows are about crime, and they always involve a psychopath. We're drawn to evil like magnets. But on the other hand, we seem to refuse to accept it when it's sitting next to us.
That's so true. That's so true. It's just, our brains just don't go there. There were some interesting things that were said about morality. And Fred said, I suppose remorse is similar in that sometimes after actions, I can intellectually appreciate that I should not have done what I did. I don't feel sorry for it in the same way I don't feel sorry when I make a bad move in chess. It's just, you know, to not have remorse and not have guilt. Because people say to me, you know, when they're trying to recover from abuse of this type, you know, don't they feel bad about what they did to me? No. They don't.
They
feel bad about how it affects them.
Yeah, but they will convince you that they feel very bad about it. And they will also convince you that it's something that you can help them fix. Whether, you know, because Steve actually, you know, he had the most comprehensive list of all of them. I mean, everything from, you know, a big one is abuse as a child. Things that you'll never be able to really validate because they're probably not that attached or close to their family. So they have all these reasons why. And so they can turn a rational discussion into empathy on your part, pouring back into apologizing for them for misunderstanding them. They can turn any conversation back on its head. And, you know, it's interesting how they do look at it because, yeah, that's a dividing line is people with this personality disorder, they're born this way, so there is no hope. So you can try all you want, but you're not going to change things. You can crusade all you want, but you're not going to. And that's part of my message is that you got to give it up, but you got to give it up safely. Because you're never going to change this personality. It's a genetic disorder. They know it's in the genes. They don't know how it transfers down. Like all three of these guys were pretty clear they got it from their father, the gene from their father. And you can really start to muck up your life. I mean, think about how bad things are as a single person. Now introduce kids into the scenario. Then you've got a couple of issues. I mean, did they get the gene? I mean, really, are you going to be raising the next generation of monsters? And they're clever enough to always know how to stay one step ahead of getting in trouble. They're not your typical guy in prison.
No, they're not. You know, sometimes I use the word brilliant because it is how they can manufacture a scenario to manipulate someone within seconds, to me, is almost a brilliance that we could never, ever conceive of or do, no matter how hard we tried. You know, and another thing that I found interesting is that, like Fred said, that he thinks others, that we all wear masks and we all put on performances with these feelings of loving, caring, sharing. And he thinks that we're being hypocrites by being hurt by the actions that are being done, doing, but really we're doing. So they really don't see us as being who we really are. They see us as weak. They see us as vulnerable. But they also see us as guilty.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, he had a very simple explanation. He said her mistake was she answered the phone. And you know, that's what I found so interesting in writing with these guys was that they would answer, like when I asked Fred about Steve's giving drugs to his victims, okay? That was probably one of the more alarming things, okay? Although the whole process was super creepsville, okay? And people have asked me, well, were you scared? No, I was never scared. I didn't feel like anybody was going to hunt me down or, I didn't start running around installing alarms in my house or anything, but it was creepy. And so when I asked Fred about, would you ever give your victims medication? You know, he starts off as a perfect example of how writing really got to more of the truth because I couldn't see any other way to get the truth from them. Like if I interviewed them, they would have access to my emotions. So there were times, and I didn't want them to feed off of me and change the storyline around. So he would answer quite simply with, well, that's deplorable. You know, what kind of creep would ever do something like that? And then he keeps talking. And then he comes to the real proof of the matter, which is, well, you know, I could get caught because it would leave a chemical trail. So, you know, they start off with what society probably hears them saying down to what their real feelings are. It really wasn't that deplorable. It was the fact that he was smart enough to see that he could get caught doing it.
I know. So, I read that. I was absolutely amazed to hear him say that.
Yeah, yeah. And the other guy was like, oh, well, I wouldn't give him medication because I want a fair, even playing field. You know, I want to beat him at my own game. So, yeah, they have a Yeah, it was. There were times that I just felt like just so disgusted, and you know, I just feel so much for the victims. I wish I could have like found some of these people they were talking about and reached out to them and said, "Hey, you know, you probably feel like you're crazy, but you're not crazy. This guy really did you in." But there's no shortage of people for them to do it to. The world is full of nice, caring people, so they have this open playground. And they don't see it as anything, and that's what I really try to drill into victims, is that you keep going back because you think things are going to change. They have a genetic disorder. Their minds, unless you're even a brain surgeon, you're not going to change that missing chip, which is the empathy chip. They don't have a conscience. A conscience is something that develops between the ages of 3 and 5 years old. So you're born with it. You're not at that level. You're going to either become a successful psychopath, like I write about, and be raised in a higher socioeconomical level, and your parents are going to nurture you better. So you're going to end up running a big corporation or being like these guys, or you're going to be in a lower socioeconomical and be the one out of 4 prison inmates. Because you're going to get caught. You know, one guy I was watching this interview, and this was a more of a lower level guy who probably spent most of his life in prison. And he had a very simple analogy. He said, "Hey, what I do is on the very first date I slug them." And the interviewer said, "Well, why do you do that?" And he said, "Well, because I either have a victim for life or they leave." I mean, that's
wow.
Really just, you know, yeah. But see, that's how a lower level thinking guy would think. But these guys have a whole plot. I mean, they don't want to get you to leave. They just want to torture you. I mean, Fred even talked about how if it didn't end up well in his mind, he would circle back around, reengage the person, and then crush them because he didn't feel like they'd been crushed enough.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty. And you know, people meet. I don't know. Where do most of your people that you deal with meet these guys or gals?
Oh, my gosh, they meet them everywhere because I deal with people who are victims of childhood abuse, so some of them are born into families like this. Some are in romantic relationships. Some are in work relationships. Some have friendships like this. So we meet them. We meet them everywhere. But there's a vulnerability that sets people up for getting involved with people with narcissistic personality disorder. There is a vulnerability. Psychopaths... I guess that, you know, everybody has a certain amount of vulnerability, and maybe some people can catch on a lot faster than others, but they are good. It's very hard to see through what they're doing until you are totally dismantled as a human being, just ruined.
Yeah, and even then, every victim that I've ever encountered has a severe case of PTSD. So at that level, your cognitive skills are at the lowest they could ever be. Your ability to escape is very low. You have lost all the people in your life usually by that point. You probably lost a lot of money at that point. You're scaled back to about zero at that point. You know, your resources are all gone. So it makes it very difficult for the victim at that point because you can't expect them to think like a clear-headed person. They're not. And they're never, you know, until they heal. And I think the biggest issue is boundaries. It's not it's a clear set of boundaries. When you hear that first weirdo comment, you know, don't rush out with that white can of paint and paint that red flag white. And that's what every victim has said over the years, is they ignored the symbols, they ignored the symptoms, because here they're going back to that initial honeymoon stage when things were really a lot of fun and this guy was just a charming in their life kind of a person.
Right.
And they often get described as soulmates. They appear like soulmates because they have gotten all your information. They know what kind of background you come from. They know your father was an alcoholic and your mother was mentally checked out. So they know all these things. So that's how they can also bring you to your knees when they need to, by pointing it back to you. Well, how
exactly.
could you accuse me of this, because you're a loser because your father was an alcoholic and I'm the best thing that ever happened to you? So they can keep triangulating the person back around. And even all of them are massively into multiple affairs and stuff, but they seem to get away with it. They have this charm that keeps drawing them back into these people's lives until they've emotionally drained them and they have nowhere to go. And then they're of no use.
Right. Bill said, he said, try as I may to sympathize, I never think it's convincing. To counter this, I have created my personality to include a more manly response to empathy and appear to be the rock you can lean on. So they have other ways of adapting and other ways of convincing us that they are what we need.
Yeah, because we lay it all out for them. Because in the very beginning, we're doing all the talking. So it just, that's the same reason why people go to therapy, is so they can talk, because they don't have enough people in their lives. If people had more friends, and I mean real friends, not Facebook friends, they would have ways to analyze situations. So when you're out with a really disordered person and you're doing all the talking, you walk away feeling very good about the situation. You feel wanted. You feel loved. You feel all of these things. And then they use that talk as reinforcers for that feeling. And that's the information that they're then going to pull the rug out with.
That's right. That's right.
Because you
Amazing.
Feel a very strong bond. Yeah, you feel a very strong, you know, a lot of times people will, if you talk to people, I used to have to do a lot of events and stuff, and people would feel like they really got to know me, and here's the reason why, because they did all the talking. So I can really understand how the victim gets drawn down that path, because you're all of a sudden the center of this person's orbit. You're everything to them. You know, they want to rush you along. You know, they want to move in with you immediately. They know everything about you. And this is just the best thing that you, it's like something landed out of the sky for you, is how you end up feeling.
Right.
But
and
see,
you talked in
the
beginning of the, I'm sorry, you talked in the beginning of the show about stranger danger. That's what's so scary. They walk and talk like you and I do, and they can act like you and I do. But it's not real. And that's what sucks people in.
Well, yeah, because we have this compassionate image that the devil looks like the devil. We don't have this image that it could look like us. And we don't have this image that it could be directly in our lives. Or
right.
if it's in the life of one of your friends. I mean, they get totally discounted. We don't believe
right.
them when they say they're with a psychopath. And if we do believe them, we will immediately discount them for being so foolish to let it go on for a number of years. So as a society, we don't accept them, and we also don't accept people who have been victimized by them. We feel like, you know, why did you give him all your money? Because, you know, I wouldn't have done that. Well, that's how we as a society continue to re-victimize people. They've already
right.
been a victim once, but because we don't get it, we then re-victimize the person by
yes.
them trying to tell their story.
It happens all
I
the
was
time.
Taking, well, it does, and that's why you're probably in a very big growing field, because
right.
people are left with nobody, and everybody's
right.
out to blame them. The psychopath will blame them for getting involved in the situation with things like, why'd you answer the phone? I mean, really, it's sick, but it's very simplistic. They will blame you all the way till the very day that you die, and your friends and family will be blaming you, and you're going to be
right.
blaming you. So
right.
the circle of abuse becomes, like a Zen teacher said years ago, when we start to abuse ourselves, it's only a matter of which size club do we pick up. So it's a crazy abuse cycle. I mean, that's what I find so fascinating about it, because it takes a kind, caring person to step in the door, which is what society wants, are kind and caring people. But then once they get abused by the abuser, this narcissistic personality or the psychopath, then the rest of society then piles onto that person. Like, how could you be so foolish? Why did you do this?
Mm-hmm.
They don't get any breaks along the way.
Right. And to boot, psychiatrists and psychologists don't necessarily always understand this either, because psychopaths will go into group couples counseling or something like that, and the only reason they do it is because they want to make the other person look bad and prove that they're right. But many psychologists and psychiatrists can't see through them. And so the victim does get blamed, and they just feel completely hopeless and helpless.
Yeah, I heard that so often over the years that people in therapy would get bounced by the therapist. They would get ganged up on by the therapist. And mm-hmm. so I think that's quite common. As a matter of fact, Fred talks about that, conning the therapist into thinking that he was the greatest guy on earth and she was really something that was just had her screws loose. Because really, right. think about it, by the time you do go to a therapist, you do appear like you have your screws loose, okay? Because your world has been so altered that you're not acting rationally when you're the victim. There's nothing about it that's rational by that point because everything has been turned upside down on its head. So by the time you seek counseling, unless you really qualify who is going to be your counselor, it could magnify by 1,000% at that point. If you think your friends and family turn on you is bad, think about having your counselor turn on you.
It's horrible.
So it's horrible. Fred actually made a real point of, you know, with that one gal, I mean, counseling was her one safety zone. Well, he made sure that he destroyed that. That mm-hmm. was his mission. He circled back around to destroy the one place that she had any kind of chance of healing. So, yeah, I think that when you're dating somebody or whatever, I don't think I would go to couples counseling, okay? I think I'd go to individual counseling first. I for some reason, something tells me that couples counseling could lead you down a bigger, darker path. That's why I'm so much of an advocate for the victims because they just get it from every corner. I mean, I lost my business to a psychopath many years ago, and I don't really ever talk about it much because it was a horrible point in my life. I mean, people that knew me for years didn't believe me. It was because people are like, how do you get fired from your own job? Well, yeah, mm-hmm. it happens.
Right.
I can tell you it happens.
But a similar thing happened to my husband. Yes, he lost his business because of a psychopath. Yes.
Yeah, and so everybody looks at you like, how on earth do you get fired and your own designs taken over by somebody
mm-hmm.
else? And how, you know, so everybody's looking at you weird. In my case, it went worldwide, this project I was working on. And so everybody's like, what'd you do wrong? You know, and these are people that knew me. So I became more and more isolated because it was like nobody could believe. And they all believed this other person because they, you know, and Bill was the scariest. Well, they were all creeps. But anyway, Bill gave the best examples at work. I mean, how he would maneuver people, you know, in a work environment. And yeah, and when it happens, that's why I feel so much empathy and I'm such a mission to try to help the victims because they get it from every single direction. I can't think of a single direction. I think the only person that doesn't turn on a victim is your dog, okay, and your cat. Really.
I agree.
In my case, those were the only people that kept me alive. I had 3 rescue dogs from Mexico at the time. They were the only thing that kept me centered because everybody else flipped upside down. So in the end, they were the only resource that I had, which is really sicko when you think about it. So, the victims, that's why I really admire people like you doing work in the field, because the victims have nowhere to go. They have nowhere to go, nowhere to run. They've lost it all. The future looks bleak. They've been told when the relationship is dissolving, they have become convinced that they're the ugliest, stupidest, most worthless person on earth.
And if they had only done things the way the psychopath or the narcissist wanted them done, they wouldn't have this problem.
Or the way your friends and family wanted you to do it.
Right. The guilt is immense.
Everybody's an expert. Yeah, everybody is an expert. Everybody in your life will be able to dissect everything you've done and tell you exactly everything you've done wrong.
That's
like, they're all perfect, right?
Exactly. And at some point in their life, they may very easily fall prey to these people because they're not aware. We're talking today to Diane Emerson, the author of Psychopaths in Our Lives, My Interviews. And this is just absolutely incredible. Diane, where is your book available? Where can we get your book?
It's available on Amazon. And one thing to remember is my name is Diane with 2 N's, D-I-A-N-N-E. So you can find it on Amazon. It's available in paperback and ebook. Although I do recommend the paperback just because there's a lot in there. I'm sure you can say to that yourself, Randy, there's a lot in there. So unless you're just a solid e-reader, I recommend the paperback because the first couple chapters, you know, the first is a very technical explanation of the history of psychopaths and whatnot. So the conversation really gets going by the time you hit chapter 3. And that's when they're laying out all their trade secrets. So
exactly.
Amazon
I,
is
I
your
completely,
best.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a book that I'm going to keep with me. Because sometimes people don't, you know, actually I'm pretty successful in getting people to understand that they've been victimized. What I tell people is, you know, this isn't about you. It feels very personal, but it's not about you. You've been victimized the same as if somebody robbed you in the middle of an alley and you're a victim. You've just been targeted. It has nothing to do with you. It's just you have been victimized. And that relieves a lot of the guilt of feeling, you know, like they're responsible
well,
for this whole thing.
Right. So that's what they're good at. They're good at convincing you that it's all on you.
Right.
Everybody in their life has, by the time they probably get to you, my guess is, well, a couple things, is that normally they have autoimmune disorders by that point because the stress of keeping up with the situation is so intense. They've got PTSD. Everybody has told them they're crazy. They remember a glimmer of a time in their life when they used to be successful and have fun and be the life of the party. So they still have that tiny little glimpse in their life, but their autoimmune system is worn down. They're crazy paranoid. And there's no place that they can turn that isn't blaming them in the end.
Exactly. Exactly.
And remember, everybody sees the psychopath for the mask that they want to put on. So everybody will, a lot of people will come to this person's aid. So then it gets even more complicated because your best friend who you're talking to about your inner feelings will inadvertently be feeding information to this psychopath or this narcissistic personality because they're that good. They're that good
right.
at getting information from people in your life. So they really will topsy-turvy you from every single direction.
Right.
You'll have nowhere to go, nowhere to hide.
That's right.
So, yeah, it's a very complicated thing. Your health is ruined. Your nervous system is shot. And you don't even know how you got hit.
That's
because
right.
Because all along the goal has been to make you crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, Steve alone with the drugs, I mean, you talk about being crazy. I mean, he did that because the family and friends had rejected him. So by giving medications, she was able to get even more wobbly, and then he looks like the hero because he's there for her, okay? He's her guy. She's getting wackier, and he's there to hold her up. I mean, that is just probably the most perverted twist
it
around.
It is perverted, appalling. It's hard to believe. Diane, we are just minutes away from the show being over, so I want to give you an opportunity. Do you have a website?
Yeah, I do. There's a lot of good stories there. Conversation has been slow, but if you want to register, I'm the only person that sees your information. It's psychopath-research.com. And if you find somebody's story that you like, just click on their name. I've owned the software for years, so that way their other posts will show up. So if you find somebody who resonates with you, just click on their name, and you'll be able to read a little bit more of a history. But I keep it alive because there's still a lot of good stories that people will relate to.
Okay.
And relating to things is what helps people feel a lot less crazy.
Absolutely.
When they could,
absolutely.
They're not
Thank
the only
you.
One. Yeah.
Right. Thank you for having that out there. Well, it's been such a pleasure. I'm so glad we got to connect today and that the storm didn't get in our way. I guess we were meant to do this show. It's very, very important for people to hear this. So thank you. And I did thoroughly enjoy your book, and I will keep it as a reference on my shelf to help others. So it's really been a pleasure, and I hope you have a wonderful day.
Well, thank you, Randy, and I really appreciate the feedback. You know, when you're right, when you're alone, and you don't even know if people are going to like the topic because no one's ever written from that angle, the validation really helps because I'm glad that you found it helpful, and I appreciate being on your show today.
Oh, my gosh, yes. All right, bye-bye. Have a great day. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. So we are out of time today, but thank you for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host and author Randy Fine. Signing off until next time, may joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed today's programming. To learn more about Randy Fine, read her articles, or to make a counseling appointment with her, please visit randygfine.com. That's RANDIGFINE.com or visit her on Facebook at Randy G. Fine.